There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Uh-huh.
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Good morning. You're listening to Radio Free Conscience on your community radio station, WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. My name is Paul Riesmandel, and this is your biweekly look at the world of grassroots and community media. And this morning, I'm lucky enough to have two guests here from our very own Twin Cities of Champaign-Urbana, who were able to make it to the World Trade Organization Ministerial, which was now 2 weeks ago. And we're active and took part in many of the independent and grassroots media functions going on at the Indy Media Center. So I want to say good morning to Peter Miller with the Illinois Education Association, also host of WEF's own Illinois Labor Hour, and Molly Stentz, who, amongst many things, is involved with the School for Designing Society.
Hi, good morning. Paul. Thanks for letting us take some of your airtime.
Oh, well, thank you for coming in and letting people know that what was really going on out there in Seattle.
The truth. People want the truth.
That's right.
Okay.
So, right here, you have a tape, you said, that sets things up, frames things so we can begin talking about it. This is an interview you did while you're out in Seattle, right?
Yeah, this is probably the last interview that I got when I was in Seattle. This is with the cameraman from C-SPAN who was taping the debate or broadcasting the debate between the pro-WTO and the anti-WTO panels, and this is on Tuesday night, so it was just as the curfew had been imposed on downtown Seattle, and we were actually right on the boundary, which was kind of made it kind of interesting for me trying to get out of town. Were they going to let me get out of town, or weren't they? But one of the reasons that the Independent Media Center existed and there was a need for independent media is because of the rules that the WTO puts, or has, on who gets what information. And what he's going to talk about is the rules that are imposed on the actual proceedings. So that's kind of part of why there is a need for the independent media, in addition to just sort of the having broadcasters and having perspectives that aren't motivated by a profit motive, but are motivated by a desire to get certain information out. So this is just kind of, I thought this summarized what was going on and summarized the way that the WTO handles communication pretty succinctly.
And this is the cameraman for C-SPAN, which is the cable channel of the House of Representatives, if I'm not incorrect. So talking about the media situation in Seattle.
Okay. First of all, I'm here at this is going to be the debate on the WTO and the town hall, and I'm speaking with a cameraman from C-SPAN. Could you tell me your name?
Yeah, hi, my name's Jim Dixon.
And are you, how do you feel being in front of the tape recorder?
It's just fine.
are you all organized there at C-SPAN?
Well, I'm a local producer here, and I represent them when they want to cover media events here in the Seattle market.
I see. But are you a member of NABET or anything like that?
No, I'm an independent producer.
Okay. We were just talking a minute ago about the World Trade Organization ministerial meeting and whether or not press have access to that. I mean, certainly there are thousands of press people in the city, and they've given away a large number of press passes to people. But what do you get for that? What can you actually officially get with your press pass?
Well, my sense is that the WTO basically has a number of events that they call open to the press, but I guess you could make your definition of open as to what you would like it to mean. What it means to them generally is that if they feel that they want to have control of their meetings, then they will provide what they call a pool feed. So individual networks or independents are kind of at the mercy of the pool producer to supply them with information, video, and or audio as the venue warrants. If it's going to be a general session that, quote, is open to the public, meaning press passed individuals who have credentialed in advance to be available to cover media-oriented events, then those credentialed individuals have the opportunity to be on premise and report as they feel appropriate.
But the meetings themselves, the actual negotiations that go on and the discussions among the ministers aren't open?
To the best of my knowledge, they are not open. Again, as I said, if indeed they want to communicate content of those meetings, then they will notify the WTO pool media services that that information can be disseminated on a live or somewhat delayed basis. Or they'll put out their own press release recapping in their analogy of what took place during the meeting.
And just for understanding, how does that contrast with the way that C-SPAN, for instance, is able to cover the United States Congress or congressional hearings?
Well, I would think that this is more controlled. Obviously, from a C-SPAN perspective, dealing primarily with media in Washington, D.C., it's a totally open environment, and they're free to go and come pretty much as they wish it would be, as well as most media are. In this event, in that it's not a United States-oriented and offered event, rather than being WTO-managed event, then we are just a participant as opposed to the organizer.
Yes.
Big difference.
That's right. Okay, well, thanks very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay, and that was Peter Miller, who is here, speaking with a Stringer camera person for the cable network C-SPAN while he was out in Seattle at the WTO. And that was the Tuesday when I guess, all hell broke loose. Downtown in Seattle, and you said this was just before they had enforced the curfew. You're doing this interview.
It was as they were enforcing the curfew, actually. But yeah, that was sort of the transition point between the free downtown Seattle and the imposition of martial law in the city.
Well, so maybe if you could now, did both of you show up the, before the ministerial started down there in Seattle? Up there, I guess. That's a yes. And then, so they were doing teach-ins and organizing before the ministerial began on Monday. Is that correct?
Yes. The International Forum on Globalization sponsored two nights of teach-ins on Saturday and Sunday, as well as the Direct Action Network, which is an umbrella group of lots of non-governmental, non-profit organizations working in the area. Sponsored lots of workshops and trainings and teach-ins around the Seattle area.
So what types of things were they doing workshops and training on?
They were doing workshops on puppet making for the marches and lots of art making. They were also doing role-playing on how to stage interactions with police and with media. Down once they were on the streets of Seattle, they were also doing workshops on nonviolent civil disobedience, also legal workshops, what people's legal rights were.
So really this was, these were workshops trying to teach everyone who showed up, give you a crash course, essentially, in ways to sort of conduct yourselves, to know what you're doing, to know how to protect yourself, I guess, and also to be able to give a good presentation to in the hope that people would see this on TV or see you on the streets to get your message across. Mm-hmm. Is that really what it was about?
Right. I think we might want to divide this up into two separate threads, and that is describing what is the Independent Media Center. I mean, that was really the place where I was really impressed with this outfit. It was an independent media center for activists, and this is something that just the activists in Seattle had set up, and they found a storefront they found a few storefronts, actually, that they could just, that they were able to rent, and then they were able to set up an entire network, a local area network that was also connected to the web. And this was designed to be a place where independent media activists from around the country could just come in and have resources that they could use for both getting information, for both recording information, recording what was happening out on the streets, but also editing it and producing it and putting it out on the web. And it was really an unbelievable thing to see this, that this existed. And it wasn't sponsored by anyone. It wasn't sponsored by or anyone, you know, notable like Public Citizen or the Sierra Club or the International Forum on Globalization. This was just grassroots activists. They ended up going something like $70,000 in debt to get the thing to happen, or maybe even more than that, to get the space and to get the computers and the editing equipment. And when we got there, it was all set to go. I mean, you showed up and you checked in. You got a press pass, and they showed you. You know, they wanted you to volunteer. It was all volunteer run. So when you got your press pass, you agreed to do a volunteer shift in the center, either checking people in, doing the phones. I don't know, doing security. There were all kinds of different things that just needed to happen in order for the center to stay open, and they relied on people who showed up to do that. And then once you got there, you had access to anything you needed. So when I got there, I could have gone, if I didn't have my own field recorder, I could have gone and checked out one of, I think, 5 or 10 mini disc recorders, little portable mini disc recorders that I could have just taken out onto the street and used to pick up audio and follow people around and get media to put back out on the web to give the world my perspective on what was happening in Seattle. And also there were editing facilities and all kinds of things. So it was really, really just amazing to me to see this whole thing set up just by some grassroots activists who decided that it was what they wanted to do. And at the end, I mean, I was working the check-in table and for a while on Monday, actually, and we had given out probably 200 or 300 press passes by that point. And these are just independent people coming into town who wanted to, you know, help them get the message out about what was happening in Seattle. So people from community radio stations, from independent zines, from cable TV, or from public access television networks, just anyone who wanted to could show up and take care of this. There was one, and then there was a contract that you signed as well when you got there. And the contract stipulated and explained what the ground rules were. And those rules were that you weren't there to make money. I mean, the purpose of your being there and the purpose of their having that center wasn't so that, you know, if you work for the Octopus, you know, you come in and you sell your story back to the Octopus. It was so that, I mean, you could do that. There wasn't anything barring you from that. But the purpose was to get content out on the website so that everyone could have access to it. And if you did sell your stuff, then 50% of your revenues from that were supposed to go back to the independent media
center. Right, you want to share and help them out.
Right, because they still had like $35,000 in debt by the end of the thing. So,
well, and that, I mean, that's really amazing because it... One of the great things I think about something like that is it's like a newsroom for grassroots activists. You have the sort of facilities normally really reserved for the ABC, CNNs of the world to have access both to the type of equipment needed to go collect these things and deal with it. But even something as simple as a press pass, I mean, it's a key to open so many doors and is yet a commodity. And so many if you want to say go and view a court proceeding, very frequently they won't let any other visitors in who aren't immediately involved with the case unless you have a press pass, right? And this is something which, you know, any media organization gives out very guardedly, but here they were giving them out to people who were coming in and agreeing just simply to participate according to these terms.
Exactly, right. One more thing I wanted to mention about, or two more things actually, was the assignment sessions. In a typical media organization like a newspaper or something, they have one person who stands up and says, all right, you work for me and you're going to cover that and you're going to cover that and you're going to cover that. And so here we are in Seattle with hundreds of things happening or dozens of things happening, marches everywhere, rallies, speakers all through the city. And so they tried to do something similar to this, but it was interesting because it was a volunteer-run outfit.
Right.
And so on the first day, on Monday or Sunday night, actually, they had someone one of their group kind of self-nominated himself to lead this thing. And he got up and gathered everyone around and said, all right, we're going to go through the list of events and we need people to volunteer to take them all. All right, we want one video, one audio, and one print person on each of these events if we can do it. And he just went down this list of... It was just an incredible list of events, and people volunteered to take them, and they volunteered to go out and cover those events and bring the stuff back to the center. So I was really impressed with everything that they did, really. I mean, it was kind of chaotic, and some things mm-hmm. didn't always work, but to have that kind of a facility available to people and to have that open and to kind of bypass the corporate media and to bypass the for-profit media, which is all of the media in the country, right? Mm-hmm. I thought that was just really important. The final thing that I want to say is about Studio X. And Studio X is a kind of an adjunct to the main independent media center. Mm-hmm. And it was a live webcasting site. So there were people there, people who identified themselves as anarchists, mm-hmm. They worked at an ISP, or they had access to someone who owned an ISP, an internet service provider, and they had set up a live webcasting studio at a different location in the city. And so the whole time that we were there, there were people, you could just, again, sign up and take a 2-hour shift doing live webcasting.
And you did that.
And I did that. And I'm not sure if it actually worked when mm-hmm. I was there, but I had a fantastic time doing it. You know, I got this international, or this German trade union leader to come onto the program, and then a letter carrier from Santa Cruz, and also a longshoreman. And the longshoremen closed down the entire west coast of the United States during this thing. It was like the closest thing to a general strike we'd had. And I had a great time doing it. And it was also, you know, the idea that you could actually communicate with people all over the world is just a very powerful thing. And the fact that there were just people in Seattle who had set this all up and had it available for those of us who came into town and were ready to put some content out, I thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. What I want Molly to talk about is the importance of the media center and why it was so important to have these reporters and these people with cameras all over the city. And the two things in particular I was hoping she'd talk about were the squat and describing what the squat is, mm-hmm. what it was, and then the other things that I didn't get to see because I wasn't there. I left on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the really essential things that they were able to do was mobilize in a flash. In one particular instance, there was a homeless rights group called Homes Not Jails that was doing a demonstration at a squat at a building with an absentee landlord that a bunch of homeless people and activists had taken over to provide housing for people that didn't have housing. Mm-hmm. So there was... There had gotten word back to the Independent Media Center because they had this amazing dispatch center. They had a table with phones where all over Seattle people would call in with information, with the latest breaking news all over the city. So they were getting information first before a lot of other sources because they had set this up. So they were able to dispatch people over to the squat. The phone call came in and somebody stood up, announced it to this huge storefront area, swarming with people, really busy, walking around, doing everything that they're doing. And they said, okay, we need people over there at the squat. Media has to be there to cover it. The cops are talking about storming it. They're talking about arresting people. They're talking about raiding it. And within minutes, they had video crews, audio crews, people with cameras over there. At the site of the squat where activists were holding a demonstration. And that was incredibly powerful and incredibly important because otherwise lots of mm-hmm. atrocious things could have happened to people there that without any witnesses, people were attempting to peaceably provide housing for people that didn't have it, and there was a threat of them getting trampled by the police.
Did the police actually ever show up?
The police actually were there. There were large crews of them, some on horses, some in squad cars, I believe a van, surrounding the place, and they they did stay back once they saw that there was a large group assembled around the building of both demonstrators and kind of onlookers, and then the media, mm-hmm. All kind of interspersed around surrounding the building, and then the cops were on were kind of composed, made a layer back behind mm-hmm. and around the activists and the media, and they stood back and they hung out and they watched the situation, and then eventually they left, and it was considered a really a great victory for the activists. There's since been deals brokered with local housing rights activists groups in Seattle to get that property donated to be used as
wow.
Homeless.
Well, that's great.
Housing. Yeah.
So yeah, in a way, this independent media, I mean, it serves as witness and eyeballs, really, at
yeah.
the scene of these different things, because part of what, I mean, the police and other groups, and including the WTO as a large group, kind of count on is being able to do things with very few witnesses, to be able to do things with very little corroboration, actually. And as we've seen in big media incidents like Rodney King, when that eye is turned on, and when with the actions that everyone sort of was always known about but never seen, or maybe in some cases never believed, are shown, it changes people's perceptions. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems as though some of the perception or the way the mainstream press treated the WTO, and especially the protesters, changed when I saw, say, in CBS News, saw one of their own reporters getting gassed and being hustled away and saying, "What's going on? I'm press," mm-hmm. and being treated just the same way everybody else on the street was. Mm-hmm. It seems to be very powerful to bring that experience directly to people rather than sort of seeing them from a helicopter's eye view.
Yeah, I think something that a lot of the mainstream media reporters were mentioning, I was actually, while I was there, staying with a reporter for an alternative weekly out in Seattle, and she mentioned, along with other people in print media out there, mentioned that the reporters weren't going to the business pool set up by the WTO to get their news digested for mm-hmm. them, that the WTO ministerial meeting had set up this entire pool for media people, and they weren't going there, they weren't using it, they were going out on the streets and getting their own information, and they were talking to people talking to independent.
That's interesting too, because some of the people at the IMC did, in fact, have the official press passes, and they're mm-hmm. telling us some of the things that they experienced. And the WTO is very obviously trying to wine and dine them mm-hmm. and make them feel like they're very special people, so they'd get their message out. And when mm-hmm. so, for instance, there was a big welcome for them. It was a cocktail party,
right.
And they gave away umbrellas to people mm-hmm. with the WTO logos and all everything on them, and
yeah.
and just we're really trying to buy them off. And
yeah, there's a big press pack. I saw it. It was at our house of the reporter I was staying at, with little salmon bits and
right.
little tourist guides and this whole big package. Welcome to Seattle.
All right.
Well, it's the same tactic the military used with the journalists in the Gulf War, and it's been used, time and time again, because in some cases they count on journalists being lazy, mm-hmm. having close deadlines and not a lot of sort.
Yeah,
it's difficult for them to get out and get stories in some case, although this one became easier and easier by the moment, and right. so they rely on this, and their editors aren't telling them this is no good. Mm-hmm. Their editors aren't saying, "Well, this seems prepackaged." They're saying, "Well, this is the official story. Let's run it."
And this got our ratings up. So, there are two things. First of all, the idea that if people only know what's going on and mm-hmm. that they won't accept it, right? And this is the strategy the strategy that the World Trade Organization uses is to control the information and to not let people know what's going on, right?
Right.
So the more they can do in secret, the more they can control the information, the further they can go. And our entire Congress voted in favor of this thing, not knowing what it was. Public Citizen issued a challenge to all members of Congress saying, if you, anyone who can answer this short quiz on the World Trade Organization or on this thing that you just voted to approve, we'll give you $1,000. And one person out of the entire Congress
voted. 10,000, I think.
Was it $10,000? Mm-hmm. right. Yeah. Okay. Only one person in Congress was willing to do that, was willing to take the challenge and do that. Everyone else who voted on the thing didn't have any idea what they were voting on. They just said, oh, you know, business wants it, my campaign donors want it, therefore I'm going to vote for it. And now we're stuck with this thing that has more power than our federal government. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the person that took the challenge actually swung was...
That's right. That's right.
Interesting.
And so the strategy that Public Citizen and other groups were using, to get back to the media point here, is simply to expose it, simply to show people what's going on and to force them to open up and see what's happening. Mm-hmm. And this is the strategy, that if people see what's happening, they won't allow it to happen. And, you know, our democratic processes can begin to work again. We can begin to take back our democracy. The other thing about that you were saying about collusion among the press, I was talking to Jeremy Scahill, who was a reporter for Pacifica,
right.
And he just returned from Kosovo, and he was explaining that there's a certain reporter, or that when he was in Kosovo, Yugoslavia, he was, you know, following the other press around, and basically they acted like a big herd.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were one or two people who weren't part of that herd who didn't just accept everything that the military said. So, for instance, when the military bombed a gas station, they'd hold a press conference where they said, well, we just bombed a petroleum storage facility. Right? And then, oh, petroleum storage facility. Oh, my gosh, that's important. It's not a gas station that's sitting on the corner of someone's block over there. Mm-hmm. Right? And the people who didn't do that, the people who didn't just accept that stuff, were ostracized from the group, and they were hated.
Right, you're breaking the norms.
Exactly.
And you're making their jobs harder because people will expect more from them back in the mainland.
I don't know what the psychology of the, you know, why they hated, but certainly they weren't very welcomed in there.
Well, in the few minutes we have left here, I thought my question is, I mean, you saw, I mean, this really great organization here. Do you think this is something that could be kept up? I mean, grassroots media, it's difficult to do to begin with, these volunteer types of things, and this was a big event that people put a lot of time into, and it lasts about a week. Is this something the momentum can be kept up, do you think?
Yes, I certainly hope so. I mean, I'd love to see one of these centers in every major city across the country. I think importance of keeping up the work and keeping people informed has been the web and the internet. And I think one thing that they did extremely well was their website, which I could mention is www.indymedia.org. indymedia.org.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had extensive coverage of the events every day by day updates. And they've put things up there in extremely reproducible formats, such as Adobe PDF files that you can download and print out and distribute in your communities, which we've done here in Champaign-Urbana. So that's something that people can take back with them, and people around the world can look at and download that information and distribute it and keep the message going and keep working.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is, right at the very beginning of the Independent Media Center, one of the very first things they said was that this is the beginning of something. This is a trial. This is an experiment. It's never been done before, and we're going to see if we can make it work, because once we make it work for this, for the World Trade Organization, well, hey, guess what? The Democratic National Committee is coming to Seattle for their convention this year, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And they're going to mobilize the thing for the DNC.
Oh, great.
And I think that making it something that can be reproduced and put up around the country when it's needed would be just a fantastic tool to use. So you can expect some federal legislation to stop this sort of thing.
That's right. Well, this the end of the program here. Thank you for coming in this morning, Molly Stentz, with the School for Design Society, and independent activist.
Yes.
And also Peter Miller, WEF's own Illinois Labor Hour host, talking about their experiences with the Indy Media Center and Seattle during the World Trade Organization ministerial. Peter, you have one point.
One final lick, and we didn't get to talk about this, but there were also five micropower radio stations going with Steve Donifer and other, you know, stars from the micropower movement, but they kept on moving around, and that was another thing that we just didn't have a chance to talk about, but there were micropower or pirate radio stations in this.
Right, yeah. We could probably talk for another half an hour and still not exhaust things, which shows you how important what went on really is. Well, this is Radio Free Conscience on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. My name is Paul Reisman. I'm the host. I'll be back in 2 weeks.